course. As soon as I get to stand up, here comes the rain, and really make you want to just lay down for a little while, doesn't it? Well, I don't know what to say, if I'm just bringing up the rear or saving the best for last. I'll let y'all be deciding on that. But we'll start this evening just with a little bit of history. This is a letter that was sent out at an important time in our nation's history. It reads, "Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade to which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you, in company with our brave allies and brothers in arms on other fronts. You will bring about the destruction of the German war machine and the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe and security for ourselves in a free world. Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely. But this is the year 1944. Much has happened since the Nazi triumphs of 1940 and 41. The United Nations has inflicted upon the Germans great defeats in open battle, man-to-man. Our air offensives have seriously reduced their strength in the air and their capacity to wage war on the ground. Our home fronts have given us an overwhelming superiority in weapons and munitions of war and placed at our disposal great resources of trained fighting men. The tide has turned. The free men of the world are marching together to victory. I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. Good luck, and let us beseech the blessings of Almighty God upon this great and noble undertaking." For those that don't know, this is the message that General Eisenhower, Supreme Allied Commander, gave to the troops on D-Day as they were going into Europe for a very decisive battle. This is the first offensive that really turned the tide in Europe for the Allies. This was really a vast undertaking, and their top brass was scared. They were very fearful if this would even work. It said that Eisenhower had another message ready to go if the worst happened and if this beach incursion got turned back by the Germans. On that day, some 172,000 American troops, along with our allies from Britain and from Canada, invaded the shores of Normandy. A lot went into the preparation for this. There was a whole deception scheme that they'd been working on for months, to make sure that the Germans didn't find where this landing was going to be able to give them, be able to put more troops that would be able to repel. So there's a lot that went into this amphibious assault. And I bring this up because several reasons. One, this is the 75th anniversary. This month, earlier this month, we remembered the 75th anniversary of the D-Day landings. The other is we have a very poignant remembrance. This is the shores of Omaha Beach, and this is the cemetery, the Normandy American Cemetery Memorial that overlooks Omaha Beach. In this picture, there are graves of more than 9,380 American soldiers. This was, like I said, this is one of those days that everybody was on edge. As Eisenhower said, they were going up against a very fierce, well-trained enemies. But I bring this letter up, this message up, for a couple of things, because it really puts in perspective everything that we've talked about this week as well. First off, he addresses this to the soldiers, sailors, and the airmen, those that have joined the Army, as Randy talked about Sunday morning. "Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened. He will fight savagely." Eisenhower knew the enemy. He knew who the enemy was. He knew what they were capable of doing. That's what Ethan talked to us about Sunday evening, knowing our enemy, knowing how Satan is. You're about to embark upon a great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. There's so much training that went into preparations for this, and that's what Jason talked about Monday night, being prepared, having that, putting on that full armor and being prepared with that. And then lastly, in the company of our brave allies and our brothers in arms and other fronts, you will bring about the destruction of the German war machine, the elimination of Nazi tyranny over the oppressed peoples of Europe, and security for ourselves in a free world. And lastly, I have full confidence in your courage, devotion to your duty, and skill in battle. We will accept nothing less than full victory. This is what Rex talked about last night. Winning the battle, having that battle, and knowing how to fight that. So tonight, the last thing we're going to talk about is you can have all those things. You can be enlisted. You can be as well prepared. But there's a killer that could creep in, and that's fear. So we're going to talk about what Elisha says to his servant in 2 Kings chapter 6. If you would turn there this evening. I really thought Rex was going to steal my thunder last night, but when he brought up Elisha. But we're going to read this whole passage, beginning in verse 8. Now the king of Syria was making war against Israel, and he consulted with his servants, saying, "My camp will be in such and such a place." And the man of God sent to the king of Israel, saying, "Beware that you do not pass this place, for the Syrians are coming down there." Then the king of Israel sent someone to the place of which the man of God had told him. Thus he warned him, and he was watchful there, and not just once or twice. Therefore the heart of the king of Syria was greatly troubled by this thing, and he called his servants to them and said, "Will you not show me which of us is for the king of Israel?" And one of the servants says, "None, my lord, O king, but Elisha the prophet who is in Israel tells the king of Israel the words you speak in your bedroom." So he said, "Go and see where he is, that I may send and get him." And it was told him, saying, "Surely he is in Dothan." Therefore he sent horses and chariots and a great army there. And they came by night and surrounded the city. And when the servant of the man of God arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots. And the servant said to him, "Alas, my master, what shall we do?" So he answered, "Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." And Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see." Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. So when the Syrians came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, "Strike this people, I pray thee, with blindness." And he struck them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. Now Elisha said to him, "This is not the way, nor is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom you seek." But he led them to Samaria. So it was, when they came to Samaria, that Elisha said, "Lord, open the eyes of these men, that they may see." And the Lord opened their eyes, and they saw. And there they were inside Samaria. Now when the king of Israel saw them, he said to Elisha, "My father, shall I kill them? Shall I kill them?" But he answered, "You shall not kill them. Would you kill those whom you have taken captive with your sword and bow? Set food and water before them, that they may eat and drink and go to their master." Then he prepared a great feast for them, and after they ate and drank, they sent them away, and they went to their master. So the bands of Syrian raiders came no more into the land of Israel. We see in this account Elisha's servant, who has seen him do several miracles even before this. But overnight, there's a great army that's come and surrounded Syria, or surrounded the city of Dothan where they were. And he wakes up and he sees this army. He says, "Alas, my master, what shall we do?" And Elisha calmly tells him, "Do not fear." So let's talk about fear. What is fear? It's defined as a feeling that's introduced by perceived danger or threat that occurs in certain types of organisms which cause a change in metabolic or organic functions or organ functions, and ultimately a change in behavior such as fleeing, hiding, or freezing from the perceived traumatic events. Best example I can think of, little pufferfish, if you've ever seen one of those. He starts off like this small. When you see something that scares him, blows up, spines all around him. Fear in human beings may occur as a response to certain stimulus occurring in the present or in the anticipation or expectation of a future threat perceived as a risk to body or life. The fear response arises from the perception of danger leading to confrontation with or escape from avoiding the threat, which in extreme cases of fear can lead to a freeze response or paralysis. We've all heard of flight or fright or a fight. Well, the flight in this is the response from fear. You have, it is a very powerful emotion that can overtake somebody. It can shut down rational thought rather quickly. It can cause paralysis. It can cause you to freeze up. You can be scared stiff, as they say, and not able to move, not able to do anything. The thing about fear is also contagious. Ethan talked about Sunday, the Battle of the Bulge, and talked about the 101st Airborne. Well, part of that group was out of the 506th Regiment, Easy Company. And the first sergeant of Easy Company was Sergeant Carwood Lipton. And in the movie Band of Brothers, or the documentary Band of Brothers, as he talked about one night or one day when they were getting shelled by the Germans. And if you have not seen how that looks, it is about as bad as a tornado coming through an area is what it looks like afterwards. You have shells coming through, exploding in trees, just destroying everything in their path. And it's a bombardment for just a few minutes. Those few minutes, I mean, you can imagine any kind of fireworks display that you go to and you hear the big booms, it's constant. Well, during one of those bombardments, there was a private that was so scared to death that he was trying to dig a foxhole with his bare hands. And his fingers started bleeding. And he had to be taken off the line, sent to the back of the line, for fear that it would spread to the rest of the company and they would desert their post. As Ethan talked about, they were completely surrounded, ill-equipped, but had to defend that area to keep the Germans from pushing through. So it spreads easily. And the other thing about it, once it starts spreading, you start getting mass panic. When you get mass panic, you get chaos. Everybody running in whichever direction they can go. So let's think about some things that we fear. Some fear spiders. Some fear snakes and lizards. Some fear public speaking. You're looking at him. Some fear the dark. Some fear darkness. Confrontation. Change. Just things at work. Doing things differently. Having to do things differently. And even death. Think about those last four. You can sum all those up as fearing the unknown. Not being able to see what's coming. Not being able to have any control over it. So when we think about fear, let's think about it now from a spiritual standpoint, from the Christian standpoint. We know there are two kinds. We see that in Scripture. We see there's this earthly and this physical fear. It's what the servant was seeing, was experiencing. He saw this army. What are we going to do? We'll talk about that a little more as we go through this lesson this evening. And then we also see the godly or that spiritual fear. And it's not a fear where we're afraid of God. It's having that respect that we should have for God, for what He is. And we'll talk a little more about that as well. But as we talk about fear primarily this evening, we're going to talk about it from that earthly, physical standpoint. Things that we do see that come upon us, because they do have an effect on us. And that's what we have to work on. Because what this fear can do to a Christian, it can cause us to alter our answers to difficult questions just to get out of it. It could make us avoid talking about the truth, telling what the truth is. And for some, fear can be so bad it could turn them away from their faith. And that's what we want to talk about this evening. It's like any other emotion that we have. It's something that we must work on to keep in control and not let it take over and control our actions. So let's think about some examples that we can look at in Scripture. Of course, we can see Elisha, as we already read this evening, about how he was surrounded by the Syrian army, yet he was able to tell his servant, "Do not fear." Talk about Elijah, how he stood up to the king of Israel, stood up to the priest of Baal by himself, came through with that, got threatened by Jezebel, ran, and then came back. As God told him, "Don't fear, I've got this." Joshua is going to be the next leader of Israel after Moses when they're going to go in and take the land. It was a land that he went and spied previously and said, "We can go take it because God is with us." And God reaffirmed that to Joshua. And they went in and they took the land. We can see this in David as a young boy going up against Goliath, going up against this champion, being talked down to and able to tell Goliath, "You don't speak against the Lord's people that way." And he takes care of that without a second thought. We see it in Paul. How many times did he say that he was beaten, stoned, bruised, shipwrecked, all that he went through? And it did not deter him from what he was to do. That was spreading the gospel. How did they do it? How did they get over these fearful things? Because as I said, it's an emotion that can paralyze us. And if we're not careful and we don't prepare for it, we can shirk what we're supposed to be doing. So the first thing I'll submit to you is what Rex as well talked about last night, that we are not alone in this. Turn, if you would, to Hebrews 13. Hebrews 13, beginning in verse 5. "Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For he himself said, 'I will never leave you nor forsake you.' So we may boldly say, 'The Lord is my helper. I will not fear. What can man do to me?'" Over in Psalm 23. We all memorized it. We all knew it growing up when we were young. In verse 4, David writes, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." God is with us. God's not going to let us go through this by ourselves. Again, we can go back and we can look at Elisha, what he says. He says to his servant, "Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." Elisha, as Rex pointed out last night, Elisha could see the chariots of fire around the mountain, surrounding the Syrian army. He had no doubt in his faith. And he was, because he knew that God was with him. Think about Joshua. As they were getting ready to go in and take the promised land, Joshua was told, "No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage. For this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to your fathers to give them." Joshua had full faith. He had said it, one of the two spies who said, "We can take the land because God is with us." He was not afraid of what he saw. He saw the giants. He saw all the armies. He wasn't afraid of that. And he knew that God was with him. And before they entered the land, God told him again, "I will be with you. I will not leave you." Paul, as he's on his journeys, in Acts chapter 18, verses 9 and 10, "Now the Lord spoke to Paul in the night by a vision, 'Do not be afraid, but speak, and do not keep silent, for I am with you, and no one will attack you to hurt you, for there are many, for I have many people in this city.'" Paul has already been beaten a couple of times. He's been stoned once that we know of up to this point. He's been rejected in so many synagogues going throughout Macedonia. And he's made it now to Corinth. And we know, we've studied about what kind of city Corinth was. But the Lord appeared to Paul and told him, "Don't worry about it. Do not be afraid. You speak, and don't keep silent." The other thing that we have as well that God has given us is He's given us our brethren. Together, we make a great army, and we fight for each other. Looking at Elijah in 1 Kings 19 and verse 18, "Yet I have reserved 7,000 in Israel, all of whose knees have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him." Elijah said, "Lord, I am the only one." And God tells him, "No, there are more. There are 7,000 that have not kneeled down to Baal. So you go back and you do the job that I've commanded you to do." And he does that. He does that. He goes back, he anoints Jehu, he gets Elisha, and he continues to fill what was before him to do. Again, looking at Paul, such a great example, everything that he went through, but he didn't go through it alone. He had people with him. Started off with Barnabas, Silas and Timothy, Aquila and Priscilla. And Paul even writes in Galatians 6, verses 1 and 2, "Brethren, if a man is overtaken by any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in spirit of gentleness, considering yourselves, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burden, so fulfill the law of Christ." Paul tells the brethren there in Galatia, bear with one another's burden. Don't let everybody carry it by themselves. You help them out. You help each other. So the next thing we'll look at is something that all these individuals knew as well. God sees what we can't. Elisha and his servant shows us two perspectives. And it really goes back to the two fears that we talked about earlier. You have that earthly, that physical fear, which is what the servant saw. He saw man's view. Just what's in front of him. What can I see right now? That's all that he saw. Elisha had that spiritual focus, that spiritual view. He saw God. He saw the army surrounding the Syrians. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 7 tells us, "For we walk by faith and not by sight." So keeping this in mind, man that walks by sight, all that he sees are problems, sees trials, sees battles. God, on the other hand, he sees those solutions to those problems. He sees the outcomes of those trials. And he's seen the war. He knows the war, and he knows the war is won. Can't help but at this point to look at Hebrews 11 and think about Hebrews 11 as it talks about faith. talks about seeing beyond what we can see right here. In verse 1, the Hebrews writer defines what faith is. It's the substance of things hoped for, evidence of things not seen. That's faith. Through that, we can understand God's power. We know that God created everything, and through faith, we have that trust in that, that God created everything that is within His hand. Verse 7 talks about Noah being moved with godly fear. Again, not being scared of God, but having respect for what God's power is, what He can do, and being moved to build the ark as God commanded him to save him and his family. Abraham. Abraham looked through the eyes of faith because God promised him, you leave Ur of the Chaldees, you go to this land, I'm going to give it to you. But he barely has anything in this land for himself. But it's not that that he's looking for. It's his future generations. It's those that Joshua led into the land that would have that land that was talked about with Abraham. But he could see that future reward. He looked through the eyes of faith and saw that. Moses. Moses didn't fear Pharaoh's wrath, but endured as seeing him who is invisible. He knew what God was going to do for these people. He knew that God was going to keep his promise, that he was going to take them into that promised land. And lastly, and let's turn to Hebrews 11. And let's read verses 34, or I'm sorry, 33 through 34. Well, let's start in verse 32. What more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. As we've gone through our study of the Old Testament, we've seen the majority of this. We've got a few more chapters left to go, a few more books, but we've seen this happen to Israel. Everything that the Hebrews writer tells us, we've seen that happen. We've seen Israel come up against great odds and be victorious. Because God told them, I will be with you. And he kept his promises. And with that, we can have faith that God will defeat our enemies. Again, Elisha's servant saw an impossible escape in front of him, completely surrounded. Play in your mind the music for Mission Impossible. How are we going to get out of here? What are we going to do, Elisha? Elisha calmly tells him, don't fear. He prays that the Lord opens his eyes. And when the Lord opens the eyes of the servant, he sees that mountain full of the chariots of fire, full of those the army of God surrounding them. Then, that's not the end of it, as we read. As that enemy moved towards them, Elisha prayed that they be blinded. And they were. And they led that army down to Samaria, where they were outnumbered by the Israelites. Elisha and his servant didn't have to raise the first sword to defend themselves. Didn't have to do the first thing. All Elisha did was just pray, Lord, blind these people. And they did. We've seen that so many times through the Old Testament. Think about Jericho, the first city that Israel came to take over. Huge walled city, marched around it, the walls fell, and they took it. It wasn't that hard for them. Think about Gideon and his 300 men. We've talked about this week. How they used pitchers and torches and shouting. And when they did that, the Midianites became afraid. Turned on each other. It spread. The sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And we see that chaos. That fear that anybody would normally think should have been on the Israelites was on the great army of Midian. They turned on each other. They began fighting each other. Then Gideon and his 300 men pursued after them and then brought the rest of the children of Israel after them. Think about Israel and Judah versus Moab as we talk about, think about King Jehoshaphat. How they went into this valley. God filled that valley with water as the sun came up and there was a red hue on that water. The Moabites thought, these kings turned on themselves. They've already killed each other. Let's go get the spoil. That wasn't the case. They were led right into a trap that was waiting for them. They met Israel and Judah head on, and they got defeated. They got beat back severely. Skipping to the New Testament, let's think about Paul. Paul, when he was arrested and thrown in prison, he wasn't left there very long. Great earthquake, gates open, and he was able to come out. I'm sorry, that was Peter. I said Paul, but I meant Peter. But thinking about Paul as well. Romans 8, 31 and 30 through 39. If God is for us, who can be against us? We are more than conquerors through Him who loved us. Nothing will be able to separate us from the love of God. Again, think about everything that Paul went through in his life once he became a Christian and was preaching the word, how he was despised by his own people. They sought to kill him so many times, and he just continued doing the work he was supposed to do because he understood the simple fact that God would defeat his enemies. This has always been God's promise to those who will follow him. Deuteronomy chapter 20, verses 1 through 4. When you go out to battle against your enemies and see horses and chariots and people more numerous than you, do not be afraid of them. For the Lord your God is with you, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. So it shall be, when you are on the verge of battle, that the priest shall approach and speak to the people. And he shall say to them, Hear, O Israel, today you are on the verge of battle with your enemies. Do not let your heart faint. Do not be afraid. And do not tremble or be terrified because of them. For the Lord your God is he who goes with you to fight for you, or to fight for you against your enemies to save you. That was God's promise then. He never failed in that. And that still continues to be his promise. I already talked a little bit about David and Goliath. David knew who the battle belonged to. He knew who was going to win that battle against Goliath. It wasn't David. It was God. God was going to take care of that. And he did through David. He gave him the courage to stand up to Goliath when none of the army of Israel would. And it was David who used a very simple shepherd's weapon, a sling and a rock, and downed this giant, Goliath. Think about Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. We know them as well as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Let's turn over to Daniel chapter 3. Daniel 3, beginning of verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up." These three young men, standing in the midst of, at the time, the greatest power in the world, being Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, just taking Judah captive, and these three men from those captives are standing up in front of him, in front of this host that's gathered, and tells him, "No, we're not going to serve your image. Our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand." They knew where the battle was. They knew who was in control. Turn, if you would, to Revelation chapter 20. Revelation 20, beginning in verse 7. "Now when the 1,000 years have expired, Satan will be released from his prison and will go out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, whose number is as the sand of the sea. They went up on the breadth of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints and the beloved city. And fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. The devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are. And they will be tormented day and night forever and ever." This image is revealed to John that he can pass it on to those seven churches that Revelation was addressed to, that they can know that God was still in control. Things are going to get bleak. Things are going to get very scary as they're awaiting the coming of the Roman army down on Jerusalem. It was about to get bad. But John tells these Christians, God's already won the battle. This battle is over. God has defeated the enemy. I think it was Ethan that talked about, when he talked about Job. You have what Job saw in front of him, and then you have the behind the scenes, the interaction with God and the devil. Here again, we have that behind the scenes. In one fell swoop, that army that gathered against the saints in the beloved city, taken out with fire from heaven. Destroyed. Defeated completely. So knowing that, Christians can have that, can look to that, can have that hope, can have that faith to see beyond just what's here in front of us. Because that's what we have to do. Turn back a few chapters in Revelation. Revelation 2, beginning in verse 8. "And to the angel of the church in Smyrna write, these things says the first and the last who was dead and came to life. I know your works, your tribulation and poverty, but you are rich. I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Do not fear any of these things which you are about to suffer. Indeed, the devil is about to throw some of you into prison, that you may be tested, and you will have tribulation 10 days. Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death." That's where our hope should lie. We see things all around us that man can do to Christians that can bring fear to us. Persecutions. We're starting to see it in this country. you look at some of the laws that are being trying to be passed, the Equality Act that Congress has tried to, the House has tried to pass, is being done to try to silence the beliefs of Christians. They say it's not, but that's what it's going to do. You look at Pinterest. Pinterest placed Bible verses on its sensitive list for those who have a hard time trying to not want to be bombarded by that. We're even starting to see in this country violence against those who would stand up for the truth, who would say, no, homosexuality is not right. Gay marriage is not right. And starting to have violence against them. We see businesses are being ruined for their faith. The little bakery in Oregon had to close up because the state of Oregon hit them with such a fine that was pretty much a house payment or a house mortgage. They couldn't pay it because they took a stand. They would not bake a cake for a homosexual wedding. You have and we're seeing this all over in several places. In Iowa of all places, we're seeing a judge has said because of something you said, it's racist. In other countries, Christians are faced with prison and death. And that could very well come here. But we need to have the proper fear. Jesus tells us in Matthew 10, beginning in verse 27, whatever I tell you in the dark, speak in the light. And what you hear in the ear, preach on the housetops. Do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin? And not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore. Are you more of value than many sparrows? Let's turn to the book of Jude. Jude verses 22 and 23. And on some have compassion, making a distinction, but others save with fear, pulling them out of the fire, hating even the garment defiled by the flesh. Fear can be a bad thing if we let it control us. Fear of God is a good thing, and it will help us control that fear. So, what do we need to do? Romans 10:17 tells us, so then faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. So we have to enlist in our training. Just like those that were making the landing on D-Day, trained for months, we have to do the same. We have to build on our faith. That's what Paul tells us. Our training must be continuous. It can't be just a one-time thing. I've read through the Bible once. That's all I need to do. It has to be ongoing. We have to continue growing in that faith. That's what Jason talked about Monday night. We have all those armaments. We have all those implements of war. But unless we know how to use them, they're useless. So we have to start with that. We have to train with those. And our training must be in truth. We can't just go after what some man says. We have to go after what God says. We have to go after the truth. We have to rightly divide the word of truth. Paul tells that to Timothy. Because when we get down to those battles that will come, they won't be hand-to-hand combat like there was on D-Day, but it'll be battles for our mind, for our time, for our influence. Those battles will come. And that's not the time to be training. That's when you got to depend on your training to help you carry through that. We have to pray. Remember, Elisha prayed that his servant's eyes might be opened. We have to pray that our eyes be opened, that God will help us see what he sees those outcomes, and look past just what's there in front of us. We can pray to God to increase our faith. Help us through this. Help us to not become scared, to not be scared in place, to be paralyzed. We have to well remember, we're not fighting this alone. We have God, and we have our brethren. Don't be afraid to ask for help. And brethren, if somebody asks you for that help, we need to give it to them. We can't be afraid of what might happen on the other side to us. We need to help them. We need to always be ready to lend that willing hand to a fellow soldier in Christ. So as we end tonight, as we end our meeting, let's remember what we've talked about this week. Let's remember that army that stood around Elisha will be around us. That we can have what we need to fight the enemy that we know. That we can be prepared. We can have the shield, the sword of the word, that will help us defend ourselves. And as well help us to defeat whatever comes up against us. We know where the battle lies. We know the battle's already won, as Rex talked about last night. The battle is God's. The war is God's. It's taken care of. We just have to work on these little battles that come up in our lives. And tonight, we need to make sure that we keep that emotion of fear controlled and in check, that we don't let it get the best of us, that we don't let it paralyze us from doing what we know is right. So tonight, if you're subject to the invitation, if you haven't joined that army, tonight's the only night that we know that we have. Right now is all that we know that we have. So if you're subject to the invitation to be baptized in Christ, or if you're a soldier and you've let fear creep into your life, and you've let your guard down, you've let yourself shy away when you know you shouldn't have, ask for the help of the brethren here. Ask for that strength from God and for the brethren to help get through the next battle. So if you're subject to the invitation this evening, we invite you to come as we stand, as we sing.